I extol those who with loving care and compassionate concern feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and house the homeless. He who notes the sparrows fall will not be unmindful of such service.
The Mormon Channel now presents Faith in Action. Welcome to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel, a show about welfare, humanitarian aid, and service around the world. Today we welcome Michael and Melba Caldwell, who served in Mongolia. Welcome. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me read a quote that's a couple of years old, but when as I was doing some research about the show this morning, I thought this was fascinating. It was once considered the most closed country in the world, speaking of Mongolia. In 1989, it is thought that there were only 4 Mongolian Christians, none of whom were Latter-day Saints. Yet on a recent visit to the United States, the ambassador of Mongolia joked that Mongolia is 99% Buddhist and 1% Mormon. Isn't that an interesting statement,
yeah,
then?
Fascinating.
So the church is growing in Mongolia.
It is,
very much so, yes.
What were your jobs? Well, let me go back. I always have to say this, especially with Mongolia. The envelope comes. You're surrounded by family and friends, and the call comes, and you open it up, and you see Mongolia?
What's going through your mind? That's exactly what I said. Mongolia?
We were, needless to say, I suppose, a little shocked. We had actually, for various reasons, because we had been requested, actually thought we were going to Nauvoo. So was it a shock when we opened it and saw Mongolia? Yes, it was. We weren't even sure where Mongolia was.
But we have to admit, we cheated.
Mm-hmm.
We opened our envelope. It came a day early.
Ah.
And we had this feeling, and we did. We opened it, and we walked around, Mongolia? Mongolia?
So you had to act surprised the next day when the family came.
Oh, we resealed it.
The family came, yes.
It was good, though. We didn't want them to see us that shocked.
How many hours does it take to get from Salt Lake City to Mongolia?
Took us 23 hours on the airplane with mm-hmm. the layovers to get to Mongolia.
Okay.
Interestingly, Sister Caldwell had never been on an airplane before.
Oh, my. Okay.
Nice first try, huh?
23 hours. That's amazing. And you get off the airplane, get through security, and what are you thinking? What's your first impression of Mongolia?
Oh my.
We were looking first for the mission president. He was going to meet us there, but it was a difference to be in Mongolia. They are not quite as far along in their economic development as we are. It was like stepping back into the 50s and 60s in a lot of ways. Modern things there still, and yet many things literally from the 50s and 60s.
How about the accommodations? So you live in an apartment or something owned by the church or rented?
It's rented.
Mm-hmm.
We lived in an apartment pretty much across the street, maybe half a block down from the mission home.
Mm-hmm.
Mission home kind of entailed everything. But it was not what we were accustomed to. But I'm going to say Elder Caldwell. Brother Caldwell is a great fix-up man. So all of our P-days were spent fixing, and we left quite a nice apartment.
Did you? Oh, okay. missionaries there, mostly North Americans from other parts of Europe, or where do the missionaries come from?
Mongolia is, I have to say first, Mongolia is a wonderful country. Most of the missionaries there are Mongolian.
Oh.
We did have a contingent of American missionaries there. That number has been drastically reduced. But the Mongolian young men and young women are wonderful. They have about 130 now Mongolian missionaries serving in Mongolia, and I think 50 to 60 serving elsewhere in the world. Mongolia actually sends out more missionaries per capita in way of church membership than any other nation in the world, including America. Those young men and young women are very dedicated to the gospel there.
Most second generation?
First generation.
A few second generation, mm-hmm. but mostly first.
We were in a meeting, and the mission president asked all the missionaries who were the only member in their family to stand. And I would guess probably half were the only member in their family.
Or more.
Yeah. Are they ostracized by their family generally
really.
When they join? So that's not a problem with them.
Mostly not. But in some cases, yes. Families that are really steeped in Buddhism or shamanism, two major non-Christian religions there, have on occasion cut their children off for joining the church. It's not the most common thing, but it does happen, yes. Mm-hmm.
Do we have chapels in Mongolia? Do we
beautiful have chapels.
All right.
We have, half a dozen, I'm going to guess real quickly here, maybe eight of our own chapels built, the smaller branch-type chapels. There's a number more buildings that we rent, and they're in various conditions. We usually fix them up some as the church, from the church standpoint. But yes, we do have some nice buildings there, including the mission home, which is a five-story structure, one of the nicer buildings in town.
I'll ask this one more question about Mongolia, then we'll move on to your service. But when I think of Mongolia, I see a person dressed in
Adele.
The clothing they can find and furry hats and freezing to death. Is that what Mongolia is like?
It's cold.
Cold.
In the winter.
The capital city where we stayed and where the mission home is the coldest capital city in the world.
And what's the name of that city?
Ulaanbaatar.
Ulaanbaatar. Okay.
Yes. And it's during the winter, much of the winter was spent at 40 degrees below zero Fahrenheit or colder. So do they bundle up? Yes. Out of necessity, they bundle up. We bundled up with scarves and hats and earmuffs and coats and gloves.
How do they heat their homes? Are they fire? Is it coal? How do they heat their homes generally?
It kind of depends on where you live. The Ghare district, a lot of people are more familiar with yurts from Russia. Mm-hmm. They would have a coal burning stove right in the center of the Ghare. We lived in an apartment and it's radiant heat. Is that what it's called?
Radiant steam.
Water.
All of that is produced in central plant, and Ulaanbaatar has got a population of nearly 1.5 million people, a lot of apartment buildings, and they're all heated from the central location with hot steam.
Well, when that goes down, you're in big trouble then. Did that ever happen? Did you find yourself?
Never had the heat go down. We did have the water and the electricity and just about everything else go down. Mm-hmm. But thank heavens, not the heat.
But they control the temperature. Mm-hmm. You have no control
over
it.
Oh, it is what they say it's going to be.
Usually it's
comfortable
quite
enough?
Warm, yes.
That's okay.
Yes.
A lot of the seniors say they have to have their windows open. It was warm.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about service. I know that you were involved in is it called ERC, Educational?
Employment Resources.
Or Employment, right,
Service.
Employment Resources. Are you working with just the members or with anybody who walks in off the street? How does this work?
We would work with anybody that walked in, mostly the members, for, I think, obvious reasons. But if non-members came in, they were welcome, and we tried to help them.
Was there, people, word of mouth that said, hey, if you go down there, these funny Christian people can maybe help you find a job? Was that happening or did that not happen?
We did a lot more than just helping people find jobs. We had a telephone service. They have metered telephone service there.
Which we should have, by the way.
And so it's very difficult for them because it costs them money. And so they like to use our telephone. We had classes that we gave. We did self-employment workshops and we did career workshops, teaching them how to present themselves, how to, what kind of resources to use, how to network, that kind of stuff.
But they did spread the word that they could use our telephone without paying for their own minutes. So yes, word of mouth was probably the biggest way that non-members found out.
With that said then, what opportunities are there for them? What job opportunities are in Mongolia?
It's a developing country, and unemployment is a huge problem there. So the opportunities still remain limited. But the better paying jobs, the better working conditions are found in jobs that require education, much like really anywhere else, I suppose. And so we helped them a lot obtain that education, gave them that opportunity to qualify for the better types of jobs.
We were part of the PEF committee, the Perpetual Education Fund, as well as employment. We also worked with the colleges, universities there, and we also worked with BYU Hawaii in helping them get an education. It seemed like a lot of the employers preferred an education from outside of the country. They would offer their better jobs to people with an education and computer skills and English skills.
I would think there would be a line about 3 miles long to go to BYU Hawaii in Mongolia.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not hard to convince somebody to go to school there.
They would do whatever they could to find a means to actually go to BYU Hawaii. That was very difficult for those people with that poor economy. But BYU Hawaii announced while we were there that they were going to begin conducting online college work. And that became a huge opportunity
for
all of Asia, not just for Mongolia.
Mm-hmm.
That became a huge opportunity. Great interest, obviously, for the folks in Mongolia. And we pursued that greatly.
The average person have a computer in their home, or would they have to find it at a library or another place to use a computer?
They have a lot of internet cafes. I think a lot of people have computers, but internet service is another expense that they're not always able to afford.
Mm-hmm.
And the internet service is not really fast. And so, that became
those a problem. That live in the apartments may have internet and computers in their home. The hundreds of thousands that live in gears, probably most of those do not.
Mm-hmm. What's the family unit like in Mongolia? Mom and dad and kids, or has the dad kind of strayed and left the mom? Or what is the family unit like there?
It's probably fairly typical in most ways, I would think. Mom and dad and children, and sometimes the dad becomes absentee like he does here. There is that there. It's not a huge issue there, but family is very important to the Mongolians, very important. And they are good families, good strong families, many of them.
So the church really then strikes a chord when the missionaries start talking about family. And
it does.
Okay. Absolutely. Eternal families too, yeah, very much. I think a lot of times, I'll just add to what Brother Caldwell said, that you will see grandparents living with them too. And if you picture a ger that's about probably less than the size of most of our living rooms, and everyone lives in that same space, it's difficult.
Not divided in any way.
No.
It's just a large round, as I recall, structure with a fireplace or a coal stove or something in the middle of that then.
But they learn to share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would remind you of a hogan.
Okay.
We might call it a fancy tent maybe, mm-hmm. but that's what they live in.
Would you find those in the capital city itself, or do you have to get out a little ways out of the capital city to find that?
That's one of the interesting things. That capital city of Ulaanbaatar is a study in contrasts. Very modern things in many areas, but no, there's a lot of gers. We call them ger districts. The city is surrounded by ger districts, literally thousands and hundreds of thousands of people living in ger districts around the city.
You refer to it as a district. Is there kind of a leader for each of the districts? Is there kind of some political form there that is guiding these people? Or?
Yes, it's a political division. Mm-hmm. They are formed into districts, and they have some sort of structure that will act as a district office with some limited surface maps and things like that to help them. But they are formed specifically into districts.
Let's talk about a day in the life of Brother and Sister Caldwell. You get up in the morning, and if you're not going to be doing employment, what are you going to be doing today? What's going to take your 8 hours or 10 hours or whatever before your fingers freeze off? What are you?
I liked getting up in the morning and going for a walk. It's a very safe country.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Even when it's 40 below?
I didn't usually walk at 40 below.
Okay.
But down to about 12, I did. It's very safe country. I'd get up, and it's really beautiful in the morning. Fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
Later, it
changes. And then you go into the office?
We go every day.
Which is near the mission home?
It's in the mission home.
In the mission home.
That's where our office was, in the basement of the mission home. We would teach English, as we mentioned, I think, that we were required to teach English there. We didn't teach English at our office or at the church building. We had to go off-site to do that. We taught the National Archives. They do have National Archives there. That's part of their focus on family and history. So we went to the archives and taught many of their people English. We also taught Sukhbhatr Court, one of the higher courts there. We taught the judges and their assistants English. That was an interesting process, very challenging sometimes, but really good people. And English is the official second language now in Mongolia. Russian used to be. So we taught English and actually kind of enjoyed that.
Are the young people especially anxious to learn English? Is it something that they really want to do?
They learn it in their schools, but they learn it from people who are not native speakers, and that is interesting sometimes. But
we would find often people would just come up to us and say, "May I walk with you? Can I talk with you? Can I come to your office? Will you talk with me?" We met a lot of people, made a lot of friends, just letting them come and talk to us.
So one of the you're given a visa to get into the country, but one of the prerequisites is that you teach English. That's why you're there.
Yes, you have to be a qualified English teacher. Mm-hmm. So the MTC will teach the missionaries and qualify them, train them in teaching English, and then we have to have a certificate saying we are qualified. I was a teacher. I didn't have a problem. Mm-hmm. Okay. But yes, you have to be qualified and then teach English.
I was surprised almost every – I can't really think of – well, maybe our doctor. Almost every couple, one or the other, was a certified English teacher.
How long has it taken the MTC to get that certification?
Well, we're only there for 2 weeks.
Okay.
So
well, two
not
weeks
long.
And 3 days. Actually, the stay is 2 weeks, and they keep you – they train you a little bit during the 2 weeks and then an extra 3 days. However, I don't know that we can speak to that exactly. They have changed it since we went through, and the education, the training is now more formal and more in-depth than it used to be.
Especially for the young missionaries, because it was a struggle for them – to come 19 years old into a foreign country. They're so anxious to convert, and they say, no, you have to go teach English 12 hours a week. And so they weren't as focused or dedicated as they needed to be. And so they're trying to help. Well, and a lot of it was untrained. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to really help them.
Were there some restrictions placed on when you could talk about the church and where?
We can't talk about the church while we're teaching English off-site. If they come to the building for English classes, which we do have, then we can talk of the church. It was interesting to do that as we taught off-site. They could see differences in us, and they wanted to know why. And we would try to answer questions after class, though we would try to get them to come to the building and let us more properly talk to them, but we were restricted in what we could say at their location.
We had three branches that actually met in the mission home. Our mission home was very different from a mission home. We had the employment center, the doctor's office, the English office, the mission home, the mission president's home, at ACT Chapel, and all of the bishops and stake offices. Everything was in that one building.
My interest, you say there's a doctor's office.
Yes.
This is a physician for the missionaries or for the members or for?
The Ulaanbaatar Mongolia mission is the only mission in the church that has a full-time doctor called as a missionary on staff. The medical care in Mongolia is developing, but it's not where it would need to be yet. And so we had a full-time doctor on hand.
Isn't it amazing when we talk about the church and the structure of the church that we would go so far as to say, in Mongolia, we're going to have a doctor there to take care of these missionaries?
Mm-hmm. It was marvelous. We brought in other doctors to train the doctors in Mongolia. It was a marvelous thing to see that happen. Would you like an example?
Yes, certainly.
the infant mortality rate in Mongolia has been very high. And some of those neonatal specialists that have that charge were having difficulties as they would see these young newborns die, and they felt helpless. They couldn't stop it. And they were actually seeking counseling themselves because it was bothering them so much. The church saw that and recognized that and brought in two doctors, Dr. Cornish and Dr. Priest invited every neonatal specialist in Mongolia to come to the training, and every single one in the entire country came. It was free training. The church offered very good training in that and some equipment. It was a marvelous experience to see that happen. They were just hungry to learn how to help, better help the newborns there. And we're anxiously watching that now. That was recent, and we're anxiously watching to see if that mortality rate improves.
Dr. Priest told us that's the only country they've ever been in where they had 100% attendance, every doctor, every neonatal doctor in the country.
You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we're visiting with Brother and Sister Caldwell, who served in Mongolia, 40 degrees below zero. And it's time for – I just can't get past that, I guess. It's time for church. I'm going to bundle up and – and does this become a problem during the coldest part of the winter, or are people just used to it? They just bundle up and go to church?
Yes, to answer your question.
They're just used to it.
It is probably all those things. We were surprised at how much you get used to it, and we became very convinced as well that the Lord takes care of his missionaries. And we were protected, we were helped in all of those things. And we literally were surprised that we were not bothered more by the cold than we thought we should be.
That is amazing. Let me ask a little more about the country, and then we'll get back to your service. Driving. Did you drive an automobile? Did you have a driver?
I don't think you want to hear this.
There's always stories about automobiles.
Yes. I was asked to drive, got a Mongolian driver's license.
What is the process for that?
I gave $25 to our second counselor in the mission presidency, and he went and got my license.
Okay. No training or anything.
He was a Mongolian.
Okay.
I have they had to take my American license with him, but yes, there was no formal really process there at all. And it's an interesting experience to drive in Mongolia. You have to consider that 80% of Mongolians have only been driving for 2 or 3 years, 80% of those that do drive have only been driving for 2 or 3 years. They've kind of had all of this dumped on them, if you will, very quickly, and they don't know how to drive. You and I grew up with driving. Mm-hmm. They did not. And driving is a very challenging and interesting experience there. They'll do anything and everything unexpectedly, and you just have to be very defensive. They'll drive on the wrong side of the street. They'll – whatever they need to do to get where they're going, and it's an interesting experience.
So it's not really traffic signs or lights or
– Yeah, there are. They just don't pay attention. They have right and left-hand driving cars.
Okay.
And so that's confusing because the traffic is set up for left-hand driving. And so if you have a car that has a right-hand driver, then you've got to come quite a ways out to see if the traffic is clear or not. And they're being new at it. They tend to pass on blind hills and blind corners, and it's very congested. There's way too many cars for the amount of roads that they have. And so if you let one car in, generally five or six will follow right behind it. It's very hard to shut that off. And so people tend to not want to let a car in because of that. And then, but there's no road rage. You don't have road rage. A lot
That's
of honking, a lot of horn honking, but nobody gets mad. They just kind of, the horn honking is to say, I'm coming, or get over.
Get out of my way.
Yeah.
You kind of have to learn the guidelines. I did finally learn that a red light means only 10 more cars can go through. Mm-hmm. So you have to learn those little nuances.
Well, that's
nuances.
In Utah, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was part of the.
Yeah, we've noticed that on Bangor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about The vehicles, mostly Asian, Chinese. I mean, where are the cars and trucks coming from?
Asia, mm-hmm. Largely. Japanese, Toyota was big there.
Mm-hmm. Hyundai was big.
Hyundai is interesting because it's also ran here, and yet Hyundai produces all the big city buses and big earth-moving equipment and lots of cars there. And mostly Japanese and Korean cars.
Future of Mongolia, what happens? What are they going to kind of place their bets on here?
Mongolia, interestingly, is a mineral-rich country, largely untapped. Metals, coal, uranium, all of those things, Mongolia has in it. So there's a lot of world interest in Mongolia right now. Mongolia is trying to control their growth and their development through regulation and agreements. They just signed a very significant and very large mining agreement with Rio Tinto, and Rio Tinto is moving in large scale. They were there before, but now they're moving in very large scale. So we anticipate that Mongolia will grow a lot. They will probably become a very rich country, opposite of what they are now, a very poor country, and controlling that growth and the infrastructure that goes with it is going to be a challenging process for them.
The members ready for that? Did they see it on the horizon? Did you get a sense that they know that things are just kind of bubbling under for them?
They know. That was those agreements that opened the door for that growth happened just a few months ago. So it's new to them. But yes, they are aware. They're a patient people, and that's good because this will take time. This is not going to happen in the next year. This will be at least a 10-year process. Mm-hmm. But they will have good jobs, high-paying jobs. Things will flip-flop for them eventually.
So here they are, new members of the church, a newfound life for themselves, and yet the future looks good for them. For a member of the church, it must be just a wonderful time for them.
We see the members probably being the leaders in some of this development because the majority of them, well, I'm not going to say the majority of them, a lot of them speak very good English, the ones that have gone on foreign missions, but they try really hard. They're very intelligent people. It's amazing to work with them, very intelligent people.
Tell us about some of the other activities you're involved with besides teaching and helping them find work. What other things were you involved in?
We had the opportunity to be invited by our humanitarian senior couple to help on occasion with humanitarian projects. Those type of projects, of course, are always rewarding and wonderful. And one of the many things that we did was bring in thousands of wheelchairs and give them away to people there in Mongolia. Many of the hospitals received our wheelchairs. They didn't have the funds even in the hospitals to provide wheelchairs for their patients, to take them out to their cars after their stay in the hospital, for instance. They would just carry them out fireman style and put them in the cars. So we provided wheelchairs for those. There have been a lot of men there, adult males. Alcoholism is a problem there. It is a challenge. And a lot of male adults will drink and then they'll try to make their way home. In the middle of the winter, they'll pass out on the sidewalk, and by the time they wake up, their limbs are frozen and have to be amputated. So there are a number of amputees there and other problems, typical problems. And we would give wheelchairs to a lot of those folks and to see the joy on their face. Mongolians, especially the men, are not very outward in their emotional displays, but
fairly stoic.
They are.
Yes, uh-huh.
They are. But you put some of those good men in wheelchairs and give them mobility for maybe the first time in their lives for some of them. And that all went away. Tears would come and they'd pound their chest and say, "Me, I can get around." And it was marvelous to experience some of that.
A testimony meeting in Mongolia. Couldn't understand a word, probably.
Oh, you'd be surprised. they have very simple testimonies and words like Jesus Christ and Book of Mormon and the Holy Ghost. They're words that we do understand. And their testimonies are short and filled with very simple statements. And it was never a wait. It was just constant. And probably close to every member would bear their testimonies each week. They like to do that.
And you'd sit there in those testimony meetings, and yes, sometimes you couldn't understand exactly what they were saying, but you could certainly feel the Spirit, and the Spirit was present in those meetings, and that's where the real testimony comes from, is through the Spirit anyway, not the words.
Anything I've missed that you'd like to talk about? You mentioned doing a fireside recently, and so I'm sure I probably missed things. What important things have I not asked you about?
It's a humbling experience to step into a third world country for a couple of years and to experience things that we've never experienced before. We are grateful for many, many things that we had never thought about before. We'd even go so far as to be grateful for the FDA and government regulation that is not present there. And so it wasn't safe to drink the water out of the tap. We use a filtering system and other things, food controls that we take for granted and sometimes get upset about here, but to not have those food controls was a whole different experience. To see the poverty, to see the struggles of those really good people was often heartrending. And to come home to our comfortable homes and the cars and the things that we don't think about has probably changed our lives forever. Those are good saints whom we will love forever, and we might even go back there someday. Mm. We'll see.
You mentioned about, Sister Caldwell, about being away from grandchildren. There are those who are perhaps listening today that are saying, oh, I couldn't possibly go away for 2 years and leave little Alice or little Johnny behind. What do you say to that?
Well, you can. We were on the technology is so wonderful nowadays. We were on every Sunday. Usually we'd pick Sunday because that was Saturday night for them. And all of our children have computers, and they had the Skype program, and there's probably other programs as well. But they would all get on, each one of them would take a turn, and sometimes they'd fight over their turn, but we got to enjoy visiting with them on a weekly basis. And they actually told us they thought they got to visit with us more while we were gone than when we came home, because we got so busy and we'd be gone. And it was a good experience. We had one little granddaughter that was born just before we left. We wonder how she would react to us. But she got to see us every week, and she'd, you know, point to us, and that's Grandma, that's Grandpa. You know, she had it all figured out, and we did just fine with her when we came home. But
for those that don't know what Skype is, it allows you to see and talk over the Internet anywhere in the world for free. There's no cost. It's over the Internet. And it's a marvelous tool. I think it's one of those tools the Lord has provided for
grandmas.
For grandmas and for others. Grandpas, too.
Did the 2 years go by just in a
amazing
flash?
Amazing. I said, when we got on the plane, I said, it seems like we were just on the plane coming over here. It just was gone so fast. And
we saw so many blessings in our children and grandchildren's lives. A lot of us have sent missionaries out, our sons and daughters out on missions, and we will say we received so many blessings from their service in the mission field. We didn't know if we wanted them to come back because we were so well blessed while they were there. And now we've been on the kind of the other end of the stick, and we left, and our children and our grandchildren were blessed simply beyond measure. And the Lord takes care of his servants and their families, and it was marvelous to see that.
Thank you for coming by. We appreciate your comments today, your service today, your love of the people in Mongolia, and that you're well and have all your fingers and toes and didn't lose anything.
We do.
Being frostbitten. I'm sorry, I just can't get past that 40 below zero. I can't even imagine.
We had 50 last year. 50 below.
50 below zero.
And by the way, we actually are in better health now than when we left.
Oh, much.
More of the blessings.
Yes.
You've been listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we've been visiting with Brother and Sister Caldwell, who served in Mongolia.